Welcome to the AI Business Podcast, where we feature conversations with interesting guests at the intersection of artificial intelligence and business.
Hi, this is Deborah Yao, the editor of AI Business, and I'm very pleased to welcome Philippe Rambach, who is the chief AI officer of Schneider Electric. Welcome, Philippe.
Hi, Deborah. Thank you for interviewing me.
So in this episode of AI Business Podcast, we want to talk about AI and sustainability. And Schneider Electric is at the forefront of these efforts. But first of all, Philippe, tell us what you do at your company.
Yeah, so I'm the first chief AI officer in Schneider. And I would say that my job is to make sure that we use AI for two things. Like many companies, to improve the way we work, to improve the way we serve our customers, but also, and extremely important for us, to improve and help our customers to reach the sustainability goals. So we really believe that to decarbonize, our customers will need to, on one side, digitize to be more efficient, and on the other side, electrify to generate less carbon. And we strongly believe that AI is a key contributor to that. So that's what I do, infusing AI into Schneider, into our offers to help our customers continue to be more sustainable.
So actually, you have a dual purpose, you know? Not only do you have an opportunity to use AI to improve your own sustainability efforts, but also you, through your products, I guess, you help your customers achieve the same.
Absolutely. We have since ever, I would say, products to help our customers to be more sustainable. And those products are made even better by adding AI-based features in those products to help to bring even more sustainability to our customers. You're absolutely right.
Can you talk about some of those products that you have? Because all of our readers know all of what products Schneider Electric does.
Yeah, that's a very good point. So we are specialized overall in energy management and industrial automation. So we provide solutions to our customers to manage their energy. So, and by energy, we mean mostly electricity. So we provide them solutions from the pure products, you know, from the plugs and switches and so on, up to complex software to manage the electrical grid, to automate your buildings, automate your homes, automate the management of the energy, etc., etc. And our story, I would say, if I look back in the last 15 years, what we do for our customers is we are always focused on sustainability, like many companies, you could say. But first, we have been saying that since 15 years. And second, we have a clear angle, which is sustainability through efficiency, and especially energy and automation efficiency. So we sold products first to make things more efficient, you know, good contactors that dissipate less energy, drives to control electrical motors and use less energy in your motors, etc. So products. Then we have connected those products to extract data from the processes of our customers to give them insights. Then we have developed software to visualize this data, understand the trends, make the right decision, what we call SCADAs or advisors. And then we have moved also into storing the data with solutions like Historians, whatever the names. And then now, of course, with our customers now having products that capture data, having software to visualize it, and solution to store them, the obvious next step, Deborah, in the story of efficiency is to use AIs to leverage more of this data.
So can you give me an example of maybe one or two products that where you've used AI to actually make it more efficient and that your customers have deployed?
Let me think. Maybe the most one of the most interesting example is, let's say that as a customer, let's say you run a large university or a large commercial building or anything like that, and you're committed to sustainability. So you put solar panels on your roof, maybe some batteries in your basement, maybe some wind generation. And already, of course, if you use these solutions to provide electricity as much as possible, you help the planet, you are more green. And for that, we have a solution called Microgrid Advisor, because it's not that simple to commute from buying the electricity from the grid, then to use the one coming from your solar panels or the one from the battery. So since ever, we had a software called Microgrid Advisor who helps you manage those different switches from different sources of electricity. That's a step one, and that's great already for the environment. What we did with AI now is we said, okay, it's good to use the energy produced by your solar panels as an example, but maybe you'd better think twice, because maybe today the electricity provided by the electrical grid is actually very green, and you'd better buy it and store what you produce in your batteries for tomorrow. Or maybe that's the opposite. You'd better take in your batteries or sell to the grid or buy to the grid. So, and that is complicated, of course, as a decision to make. And if you run a university or a large mall, you are not, your business is not to make this decision. So what we do is with AI, we forecast every 15 minutes the next 48 hours of energy needs of your building. And then we optimize using AI again to say, right now, the best solution for the planet, for the carbon, is to use what you produce, store it in your battery, sell it to the grid, etc., or any combination of those. So that's one example of how AI can really improve an existing offer to make it to provide much more sustainability and decarbonation to our customers.
Does generative AI play a role in sustainability as well, both for within your company and also with your clients?
I would say yes and no. The first thing I would say is generative AI does not replace the rest of AI. And when we speak about sustainability, when we speak about efficiency, actually most of the work that we need AI to do is forecasting, optimizing, anomaly detection, all kind of things that generative AI can do, but not as good as traditional AI, and also at a much higher cost in terms of energy and carbon. So most of this solution for sustainability rely on neural nets, but not necessarily gigantic neural nets like the one that are used by GenAI. That's for the no. For the yes, as an example, we have included generative AI in a software that we sell called Resource Advisor that our customers use to monitor, analyze their carbon emissions. Software is easy to use, but could be easier to use. So we have developed, using generative AI, a natural language interface where one can say, all right, what are my carbon emissions of last year? And then say, okay, now can you tell me by factory, by country? So generative AI today for sustainability, we mostly use it to simplify the usage, make it easier to use, simplify the adoption, which is critical because, of course, it's good on one side to have a good solution. But if people don't use it, you didn't move the needle. So yes, for the user interface, yes, for the accessibility, yes, for all of that. But still, traditional AI has a very strong role to play with forecasting, anomaly detection, optimization, and so on.
So are you saying that at least for now, the practical use of Gen AI is mainly for conversational AI? Is that fair to say?
I would say around sustainability, because then there are other applications, of course. But around sustainability, for me, it's a lot around knowledge management, way to access to data in an easier way, conversational to some point, but not too much about forecasting, optimizing, anomaly detection, and so on. So yes, at this stage, for me, it's mostly conversational is a bit short, of course, but mostly on knowledge management, access to information, etc.
So let's switch gears and talk about how you're applying AI within the company. And I think our readers would probably find that more helpful to them. So how do you do that and to achieve your sustainability goals? How do you apply AI to achieve your sustainability goals? Do you follow any guidelines?
I would say that basically, as we say in France, we drink our own champagne. So we deploy the solution that we mentioned. So we deploy in our buildings our solution to optimize the green energy, solution to optimize heating and cooling. We use AI in our factories to optimize our processes to reduce the energy we need to manufacture. We use AI to optimize the logistics to reduce the carbon footprint, etc. So my view is, we drink our own champagne. We use our own solution. We use AI to do all these kind of things. To save energy and reduce carbon emission as much as we can. And that is playing a stronger and stronger role by the day.
So is it mainly using AI to optimize your energy use, or are there other types of processes that have been optimized by AI?
Alors, we use AI in many, many different ways. Here I was focusing on the sustainabilities, but for example, if I focus now on one generative AI application, which is not directly linked with sustainability, we have those customer care centers all around the world. Today, or at least until yesterday, our employees would receive a question from a customer and they would look through FAQs that were prepared for them and they would try to build the best possible answer. Here we have a typical excellent application of generative AI where now we automatically generate the answer from our knowledge base. So we know where the information is coming from. We give to the employee the recommended answer, but also the links to the source of information so that he can check the validity of the information, because as you know, no one can fully get rid of hallucination. And then when the employee has validated, he can send the answer to the customer. So that's one example. We have many others. So we do AI for sustainability, but also for many, many other things around efficiency and customer satisfaction.
So what are some challenges that you face in implementing AI for sustainability and for other purposes? And how did you manage to solve them? Or are you still working on them?
I would say a few things. I would say first, and sometimes people forget that, AI is a transformation and will have the same difficulties as any other transformation. So the first thing I would say is don't forget the usual tools of adoptions, training, learning, all of that is important for AI also, as it is for any digital transformation. Then, if I focus a bit more specifically on AI challenges and AI potential difficulties, I would say that when I took that job, I looked around and the biggest difficulty people face is they do quite easily proof of concepts, minimum viable products, demonstrators, all this kind of stuff, but they have a big difficulty to move at scale. And based on that, what we decided in Schneider is that we don't split the project in two. We take AI first, starting by your use case, a business need. We never start from the technology. We start from a business value, which is carried by your business partner, by one of our solutions, and they want to do it. And then if AI can help, AI helps. We together develop the solution, and from the day one, we develop for scale. We don't develop for prototype and then somebody else, another organization, will do the at-scale deployment. We create a squad team that merge AI specialists and people from the businesses or from the product divisions. This squad, in the pure sense of agile, is responsible to deliver the solution at scale. Of course, during this process, we do MVPs, POCs, who are not better than anybody else. But from day one, we look at the final solution, which means that we can address the potential difficulties from the beginning, not waiting till the end to discover difficulties or issues. So I'm not sure if I am clear in what I say, but thinking from day one at scale, starting from business and then from technology, merging teams of AI specialists with business specialists is for us the way we have found to address most of the difficulties. Then, of course, we stop projects during this process, because we cannot make them. And usually we stop projects for three possible different reasons. Either we cannot do it technically, and that could be either because data are not good enough or because we cannot develop the right algorithm. But also we stop projects because the business case, the business value is not confirmed. We start with an idea thinking that there would be a strong business value, a strong sustainability impact. And when we progress, we realize it will not be there. And then we decide to stop also. So for me, to address these difficulties, a strong process with the decision to stop either because it's too difficult to do technically or because it is the business value is not confirmed, and always really starting from a business value helps a lot to address this difficulty, which is when people do too many POCs, MVPs, not enough at scale.
So what is your view regarding using open source tools, and do you use them at your company?
Yes. AI is a world of open source. I don't see any company, maybe some in the very, very military, that they don't disclose anything, but everybody uses open source stuff. There is no way to do AI today without using some Python libraries, which are open source. So yes, definitely we use open source. We even contribute to open source as much as we can. And for me, AI and open source is totally linked and correlated. You cannot do AI today without using the, I mean, I will not move into technical, but all the core libraries that have been released over the years and that we all together improve. So yeah, 100% AI needs open source today.
And how can companies ramp up on the skill sets within their workforce to not only deploy, but manage and maintain AI systems?
It's a very good question. And I think that the answer is probably depending on every company. But what I can share in our experience is we started from a strong belief that everybody in the company will need to understand AI, but of course, not at each level, at the same level for everybody. So we have separated our employees in six groups, starting with people who just need to understand enough what is AI, that it is not black magic, that it's using data, that it will not overrun the world, etc. So like a 30-minute, 45-minute training that everybody is doing, up to tens of hours of trainings and curriculum for people who really need to understand how to use AI, how to develop AI, etc. And then the special population is the AI specialists, the people which are in my group, on which we really, really have a very serious program of constantly maintaining them up to the latest knowledge and things happening in AI. You know, technology happens every day. Generative AI wave changed everything almost 2 years ago now. Things move very fast. No, 1 year ago. If I summarize, what I would say is you need to address everybody in your population and think who needs what. But don't expect that somebody can stay away from AI if you want some good adoption. People need to understand enough how it works to really adopt and use the solutions. That's what I would say, that it's not only a question of AI specialists. You need everybody to understand what they need to understand.
Talking about roles, how has your own role changed within the company? Because previously, you know, maybe a decade or so ago, you know, the tech people are very separate from the business people.
Yeah.
But it seems that now it's being infused within the C-suite and also at the board level. How has that changed at your company, or has it?
Yeah, well, first I would say I am actually the first ever chief AI officer in Schneider. And I hope to not be the last, of course. So that was a revolution 2 years ago. And what you say is absolutely true. If I take my own example, I am not an AI specialist. My professional life was all around business, P&L responsibilities, sales responsibilities. And if we want to make AI at scale, if we want to move from people who push technology to solutions who look for technology, I think we need to have people who have enough scientific background to understand what we talk about, to avoid the smokes and mirrors, but first have a strong in-depth understanding one of the business in which their company operates to use AI for really making an impact, but also understand deeply the inside of the organization, how it works, so that they find the right way to, as you said, infuse and diffuse AI in a way where this company or this given company will be able to really swallow it, use it, understand it, and so on. So yes, we need to put AI outside of the end of the pure AI specialists, of the tech lovers, to also give it to people which will see it as a tool to develop sustainability, to develop business, to develop efficiency, and so on. So yes, you're totally right. We need to have more business people involved in AI.
How's your company viewing generative AI? Is it, are you more down to earth now about what it really can do for your company going forward? Or, you know, what do you think that is the potential of Gen AI within your company?
Yeah, I think I would say that people who think that Gen AI was hype are deeply wrong. It will change a lot. At the same time, and I will make 2 seconds of philosophy, apologize for that. But obviously, generative AI and ChatGPT generates language. And because human beings use language to think, we have the illusion that generative AI is able to think. And obviously, it does not. It just predicts the next most likely word chosen more or less randomly between 3 or 5 possibilities. So that's clear. This is not thinking. This is not bringing us any way closer to general AI or to human-like AI. But on the other side, it will change drastically the way we do many things. Everything linked with language, with content creation, I'm thinking code writing, I'm thinking email writing, I'm thinking also knowledge access. We work a lot on knowledge on our side, like this example I was taking of customer care center, where we automatically generate the answer to the customer question for our employees. That is game changers. So everything around, code generation, marketing content generation, knowledge management, all of that will be drastically changed by generative AI. So on one side, yes, a massive change that will totally change the way we work. I compare it with, the revolution of the personal computer or the revolution of the internet. I think that's the same scale. But no, it is not general AI. It will not solve every problem. It is still a very specialized AI, although it is able to generate language.
So how do you handle the risks of Gen AI, like hallucinations being one of the big ones, and also, potential biases in the data set, et cetera? And I don't know if you saw this recent example from Air Canada, where their chatbot gave out the wrong refund information to a traveler, and the traveler bought tickets, and then he found out he couldn't get the discounted fare, and Air Canada wouldn't give him his money back, so he sued them and won. So that's, the chatbot hallucinated and gave him wrong information. So that's a business risk. How would your company view such a risk from Gen AI?
Few things. I would say first, we work on techniques to reduce the risk as much as we can, especially by using really generative AI to extract information for our own documentation and generate answers. But that does not remove the risk totally. So today and for the foreseeable future, we see that as support to the human. So if I continue in this example of the customer care center, and that's the same for everything we do, the machine will generate a recommended answer to the operator. It will give to the operator the document source from which it retrieves information to build the answer, and the operator will check the answer before validating. We will not, at this stage and for the foreseeable future, connect directly customers with a Gen AI bot. The risk of hallucination cannot be controlled enough in our domain to take that risk. So that's how we address it, in a very careful and simple way. Human is not removed. Human is supported, augmented.
So the chatbots on websites will remain rules-based, you're saying? And you don't connect the generative chatbot directly with the consumer or the customer?
Yeah, in that customer care center, exactly. We use it as an internal tool to help the operator to answer. It doesn't give the answer directly to the customer.
I see. So what about the cost of deploying conversational AI agents versus having humans? There's from that Air Canada example again, the CIO actually gave an interview to a paper in Canada, and he said that it actually costs a lot more to deploy an AI chatbot rather than just use a human, but he expects the cost to come down over time. Is that something you've experienced as well?
I would be a bit curious about this computation because it's not what we experience. But this being said, we should always have in mind the cost, not only the cost in euros or dollars, but also the cost in carbon emission, energy usage. I will give you an example. In most of our generative AI today, we use today OpenAI, and for most of them, we don't use version 4.0. We use version 3.5 because it's good enough for what we need to do. It costs much less, and it uses much less energy, and therefore emits much less carbon. So I think that we should not get super excited by technology. We need to look at what is the business problem to solve, what do we need to do, and what is the cleanest, cheapest solution. And if a much more simple model or even not AI is making it, use it. Don't spend the $1 million in using the very latest shiny object if good old solution makes it. So as an example, again, we develop most of our solutions staying with 3.5 because good enough for what we want to do.
So where's Gen AI being used most practically today in your view? The contact center and encoding and perhaps marketing?
Yeah, for us, the bigger things we see at this stage is everything around knowledge management. The customer care center is one example, but you can have the same for your field service representative. You can have the same for your sales. You can have the same, you know, everything which is around accessing in an easier way the huge amount of knowledge that we have. So that's one big opportunity. The customer care center is one example, but again, there would be many others. A lot around helping our sales, our software people who write code, and more, still a bit early, but accelerating very fast on marketing content generation, you know, to create images. Very soon, it seems, to create videos of good quality, generate text. So that are the main areas for us that will really transform the business. Software generation, sales support, marketing content generation, and everything around knowledge management, access to knowledge, writing support, the customer care center being an obvious example of that.
So going back to the issue we started with, which is AI and sustainability, how do you measure whether or not you're making an impact within your company? What KPIs or what metrics do you consider?
So it's always difficult. Because, you know, when you save one ton of CO2, you measure that, and that we do since many years now. To say how much of that is exactly due to AI and how much of that is due to other things is more difficult. So what we do is when we implement an AI solution, we evaluate what will be the carbon cost of the solution, and we evaluate what should be the savings. And when you evaluate the cost, this is where it is important to use the right tool. Don't use generative AI if a basic linear regression can make it. And then we compare the two. And today, when we talk about energy save and carbon footprint, we are on a ratio which are incredibly good. You know, for one ton of CO2 invested in running algorithm, you save between 500 to 1,000 ton of CO2 in operation. So today, as long as you stay reasonable and you use the right AI technique for the right problem, all our evaluations confirm that the cost of carbon to run the algorithm compared to the cost to the carbon saved by reducing energy emission or consumption is, yeah, in a crazy ratio, like 1 to 500, 1 to 1,000.
So looking ahead, what are the emerging trends in AI that you believe will have the most significant impact on sustainability?
That's a super good question. And predicting the future is always difficult. Predicting the future in the world of AI is close to craziness. Huh? But if I try, I would say that I don't think that we will be able as the humanity to address the climate change or do the climate transition without AI. Think about it. We are moving from a relatively simple situation where energy was produced by large power plants, transmitted, then distributed, to a situation where you have everywhere production of electricity with decentralized solar panels, wind generators, decentralized consumption. So that system becomes extremely complicated, and you will need AI to make that work and to optimize that. So my view, and I don't think it's an AI technique, but AI, generally speaking, will be used for climate transition in three main ways. It will be used simply to optimize the different processes to reduce the energy needed for the same outcome. Can be optimizing a manufacturing process, can be optimizing the heating process of a building, can be, basically, we have data, we apply AI, we reduce the energy need for the same consumption, and therefore we reduce carbon. The second thing is we'll use AI to use a greener electricity, because of course, if you want to decarbonize, it's good to reduce your carbon emission, but if you still burn fuel or oil or gas, you still produce carbon. The only way to fully decarbonize is to move to electricity. But then if this electricity is produced by burning, again, oil, gas, or coal, you didn't move the needle. So you need to make sure that you use as much green electricity as possible. And here again, as in my example of Microgrid Advisor, where we forecast the need of a building and therefore are able to optimize the usage of green energy by leveraging battery storage, solar panels, wind, and the electrical grid, we can make the electricity used more green. And the third one, which is probably also very important, and people forget it a bit, even if we have wonderful solutions to decarbonize, even if we have wonderful solutions to move to electricity, we need to deploy them at scale. And then again, AI will help a lot. I will give you an example of something we have done. California State in the US is pushing hard to have solar panels on most of the roofs of individual houses. The first step to do that is to have an electrician to visit your home to check that your home installation can do that. Not enough electrician in California, that slows down the deployment. We have done an AI tool where by yourself, you open your electrical panel, take a picture, and get automatically the answer of yes, you are fitted to do it, or no, it's going to be a bit more complicated. So one usage of AI is reduce energy need for the same outcome. Second one is use AI to make electricity more green. And third, use AI to make the deployment at scale of all these solutions easier, cheaper, faster, basically remove barriers to entry.
Okay, sounds good. My last question to you is, what advice would you give other companies looking to leverage AI for sustainability?
Work with us, but more seriously, my advice would be like for many other AI, first forget AI. First look at where are your main carbon emissions? Where are your main issues? Where what generates your carbon? And then where AI can help. But start from the problem, start from the need, not start from AI. And the answer will be very different. I know if you operate a fleet of delivery vehicles or if you operate a university. So start again by analyzing where is your carbon emissions, where do they come from, and then work with AI specialists, starting from the business need, from the problem, where and how AI can help.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Philippe, for joining us today, and we'll leave it there.
Thank you, Deborah. It was a very nice conversation.
To get more AI news and insights, visit our website at aibusiness.com. Until next time, thank you for listening.